this summer have been poring through the Old Testament, looking for those stories that we all know so well from our childhood, and re-examining them to find new meaning and new life from these old, old stories. The ones we were told by our Sunday school teachers, or in this case, even if you weren't in Sunday school as a child, you know this story. This is perhaps the best known Bible story of all. This is a David and Goliath story. Actually, it's the David and Goliath story. It's the ultimate story of the underdog triumphing over the powers that be. This story is so well known that it practically invades all of culture, that people know who David is. In the Renaissance in Florence, David is the patron saint of Florence, and so during the Renaissance, statue upon statue of David have been built. And David is always incredibly ripped and usually holding the head of Goliath in his hand. It's everywhere. Poet, very well-known poet, Emily Dickinson writes her own David and Goliath story, and I'll read it for you today. I took my power in my hand and went against the world. 'Twas not so much as David had, but I was twice as bold. I aimed my pebble, but myself was all the one that fell. Was it Goliath was too large, or only I too small? You see, this story, everybody knows this story, and everybody wants to be David, don't we? We want to be David, and so therefore, this story has just invaded our children's times for years and years and years. And the children know this story well. And it's almost too much, isn't it? It's almost like a fantasy tale. It's almost too much to believe that David might actually triumph over the giant. But I invite you to hear that story with me again today. It's found in 1 Samuel chapter 17. Beginning with verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle. They were gathered at Succoth, which belonged to Judah, and encamped between Succoth and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. Saul and the Israelites gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah and formed ranks against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of bronze on his head. He was armed with a coat of mail. The weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. He had greaves of bronze on his legs and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And his shield bearer went before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "Today I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. I'll stop there for just a minute. Here in our story, we see a picture of Goliath and all the glory that he is. If we translate the Bible numbers here, we're talking about a 9.5-foot tall man. He's wearing a suit of mail that weighs 125 pounds by itself. He is carrying a spear that has a head on it that weighs 15 pounds. Just the head of the spear weighs 15 pounds. Goliath is this larger than life figure. He represents all the worldly power he can possibly muster. It's military might at its best. And Goliath is the champion. He is the best of the best, wearing his flashy armor covering all of him. Well, maybe not all. We'll see that in a minute. But it's covering all of him. And he stands before Israel boasting. Boasting to them about his power and his might and challenging them to a duel. And here in this valley, with the Israelites on one mountain and the Philistines on the other, what choice do the Israelites have but to shake in their sandals? You see, this problem, this Goliath, is simply too big. Too big. Goliath for us. This is a story, and it's about a man who was really big. But Goliath for us represents all the powers that are in our world. The New Testament, and Paul calls them the principalities and powers. They're the reigning ideologies of a broken world. The common wisdom about these powers is that they are simply too big. And so if we are not sitting here shaking in our loafers or boots or sandals or whatever you happen to wear today, if we're not doing that, then the best we know to do is to find little ways to stick it to the man. These are the powers that take over our world, and we see them all around us, whether they are the isms that surround us, the authoritarianism, racism, sexism, and even terrorism. These isms surround us. They're the powers that are, and we see them, and we fear. Or maybe it's the drug runners that run between Mexico and the United States. Maybe it's the people who are participating in human trafficking. You see, all of these powers, all of these things are the evil that is around us, that surrounds us daily. And it all seems too big to take in, doesn't it? It's too big to combat. And so even if we're not fearing, we're ignoring it because we don't know how to fight. Except there was one in this story who might just teach us where to begin. And so we'll pick up today with verse 32. David said to Saul, Let no one's heart fall because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Saul said to David, You were not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. You are just a boy, and he has been a warrior from his youth. But David said to Saul, Your servant used to keep sheep for his father, and whenever a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock, I went after it and struck it down, rescuing the lamb from its mouth. And if it turned against me, I would catch it by the jaw, strike it down, and kill it. Your servant has killed both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, since he has defied the armies of the living God. David said, The Lord who saved me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will save me from the hand of this Philistine. So Saul said to David, Go, and may the Lord be with you. Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a bronze helmet on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. David strapped Saul's sword over the armor, and he tried in vain to walk, for he was not used to them. Then David said to Saul, "I cannot walk with these, for I am not used to them." So David removed them. We'll pause there once again. Here in this story, David of all people, volunteers himself for the role of going to stand in this valley against Goliath. And what is Saul's, the king's, first response to this? Just as Amy said, "You are just a boy. Just a boy." Now, it's likely that David wasn't really just a boy. He was probably an older teenager, you know, but he was still certainly a boy compared to the man who he stood to face. And what David has to rely on in this part of the story is his experience. His experience in shepherding, his experience of going up against lions and bears and protecting the sheep and killing them if it was necessary. This is his experience. And it seems crazy to me that Saul's next response is, "All right, then go." As if these lions and bears are the same as the giant who stands before David and before the army of Israel now. It seems nuts to me that Saul would say, "Go." Because if David loses, the consequences of his loss are that all of Israel becomes slaves to the Philistines. There is a lot more at stake than just David's life in this story. And so maybe Saul just felt he really didn't have another choice. Because Saul himself was frozen by fear that day. And all he can do is say to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." But Saul doesn't want to send him out into this battle empty-handed, does he? First, so he decides, "You can have my armor, and you can have my sword." And so they deck him out in all the signs and symbols of the military strength of Israel. And David, the boy, tries to just move in them. He just tries to walk around and finds that he can't even really do anything from this place with this stuff all around him. What's even more ironic to me about this part of the story is that what we know about Saul is that Saul himself was a pretty great warrior. That Saul stood head and shoulders above the other Israelites. So to think from Saul's point that he could just put this armor on a boy and it would come all right is just silliness. But even more than that if Saul didn't believe that the royal armor would protect him, himself, from Goliath enough to go and meet him in that valley, then what in the world was he thinking it would do any good for David? If the royal armor doesn't qualify the king of Israel, Saul, for fighting Goliath, how in the world could it benefit David? You see, to me, that armor that Saul tried to bestow upon David that day was not just armor for battle, but for me stands for all the symbols of worldly power that we try to armor ourselves with in order to face the world. It's as if we are in an arms race with all the powers that be. And so maybe they can be represented by four M's: money, muscles, missiles, and medals. I'll come back to those. So money, right? All that's the way that we choose to fight. If I don't have money, I can't possibly combat the world. I can't combat the powers that be without money. And that armor of Saul's was certainly something that cost a lot of money. Muscles. Have you ever noticed when a football player puts on the shoulder pads, their shoulder pads, how much bigger they look? How much by appearance they look to be more intimidating? When you see the football players out of their uniforms, it always surprises me how much smaller and more human these guys actually look. And so Saul, too, was trying to make David look like the man who could fight Goliath. Missiles. The arms race for better weapons. For better, if I just had the right weapon to deter the other side from wanting to attack. If I just have a bigger gun, a longer sword, a heavier spear, they will be intimidated and not want to attack. And thereby, if we can't defeat them, we at least can deter it. And then medals. And this one, I just needed an M. So medals, though. I could have actually gone with memories as well. And here's what I mean by that. Is that the medals that we carry, it's the awards, the accolades, the trophies that we bestow on people. If we collect enough of those things, then we will be intimidating to the world around us and thereby gain power over those things. And this is true for the trophies we collect, but also the memories of the things that have been done. So the way that authoritarian powers keep power is by keeping the legendary stories of the horrible things they've done to other people who've tried to challenge that power. These are the medals of the world. And they are what, all these things are what Saul was giving to David. Because even that armor, right, had scars. And those were the memories of the times that that armor had succeeded in victory. But what David finds is that all of this stuff, all of these M's that are just burying him, just weigh him down. And he can't move beneath the power, beneath these signs of earthly power. And so David chooses to shrug those off and set them aside and to go into battle without any armor at all. At least not any visible armor. And so we pick up our story again with verse 40. Then David took his staff in his hand and chose five smooth stones from the wadi and put them in his shepherd's bag, in the pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. The Philistine came on and drew near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the wild animals of the field." But David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This very day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the Philistine army this very day to the birds of the air and to the wild animals of the earth, so that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not save by sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. When the Philistine drew nearer to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, slung it, and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, striking down the Philistine and killing him. There was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine. He grasped his sword, drew it out of its sheath, and killed him. Then he cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Here we find David coming into that valley, staring down the giant. Staring down this giant. And it seems to me that David must have been a little nervous, or at least a little fearful. So the question is, what gave David this guts, this nerve, the cheek to stand in that valley? What gave David the chutzpah to stand there and against this giant in the valley that day? And I think we find what it is in the speeches that David gives that day, both to Saul and to the Philistine. In these speeches, David says a few things that we can carry with us as we fight against the powers and principalities, as we stare down that which is too big for us alone. What David knows and Saul seems to forget is that, first of all, that he serves a living God. That there is a living God in Israel. He says that in the first speech to Saul. It is God who saves him. It's God who has saved him in the past, and it is God who will save him again. And the fact that God is alive and working in the world is what David gives him, David, all of the energy to even stand up and say, yes, I will go and face Goliath. It's this basic affirmation that God is alive and well that allows us to go forth into the world and face whatever giants are in front of us. In his speech then to Goliath, David says two more things that are important for us as we seek to topple our own giants. The first of which is that David says that all of this, that his defeat of Goliath that day is not about him at all. Goliath falling that day is actually so that all may know that this God really is. That this God really is, and that this God is alive. The defeat that day and all the honor and the glory do not fall on David, according to his own words, but the defeat that day belong to this God. This is our purpose in fighting. Our purpose is to glorify God. And so every battle that is won is not self-serving, but in every battle that is won, it is to give God glory. The last thing that David says is this knowledge that seems like backwards thinking. What he says is that the Lord does not save by sword and spear. The Lord does not save by sword and spear. You see, the victory that day has nothing to do with the size of the weaponry that he carried on to that field. What Emily Dickinson seemed to even forget in her poem that I read at the beginning, that is that it's not the size of the dog in the fight, but it's the size of the God in the fight that really actually matters. You see, that allowed David that day to be imaginative and even resourceful in the face of the intimidation of Goliath's power. It allowed David to think outside the box because he wasn't carrying the weight of those four M's, of the money, or the muscles, or the missiles, or the medals. None of that was on him, so he approached the fight from a different place. And if David had approached that fight with all of that armor, with all of those things weighing him down, he couldn't have won. And so it's this that allows David to surprise that giant that day. That knowledge that God does not save by sword and spear means that David has to look at it differently. And as he does, he doesn't just come in front of the giant, but he runs towards him. He runs towards that worldly power. And when he does, he slings a stone. Now, just so you get a better picture of this, people who would sling stones then didn't sling just pebbles, as Emily Dickinson called them. Instead, they slung baseball-sized rocks. So when he slings it, people who slung with those slings could sling those things over 100 miles an hour. So if that rock, which is a lot harder than a baseball, right, were flying at you at 100 miles an hour, and you were in shock at the little man sprinting at you as he threw it, it was that element of thinking that won the day in that battle. And that giant took a stone in the forehead and fell face down in the dirt with a resounding thud. You see what David proves in this story is that all of the ways that we try to justify and to fight in this world are moot before the throne of God. You see, this living God has and can still conquer over the principalities and powers of this world. If we simply believe that God is alive and well, and that our purpose is to proclaim his victory over those powers, and can say that God is simply not playing the same game that everybody else is playing, if we enter with those things in our hearts and in our minds, the promise of this story is that we too can topple giants. And it's all because of the size of the God in our fight.